Hello and welcome everybody once again to the John Henry Show here on YouTube Live. I am, of course, your host, John Henry from johnhenry.us. Welcome aboard on this Thursday, the 20th of February, 2020, at a real knockdown, drag-out Democratic debate in Las Vegas last night. We're going to talk about that along with whatever crosses my mind. Y'all know how I ramble. Top of the show stuff. Don't forget, you can find me at johnhenry.us. You can find me on Facebook at both my page, John Henry US, and at I Loved to Wake Up in the Morning When Barack Obama Was President. I'm a co-administrator on that page. And of course, I'm on Twitter and I'm here on YouTube, clearly. And the fundraising paypal.me/JohnHenryUS and patreon.com/JohnHenry. The Patreon's not up yet. And also, I am available on podcasts now through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and all of the popular stuff. You can find that on my site as well. So let's get right into it. Last night we had the Democratic Party debate in Las Vegas, Nevada. Five people on the stage. We had a new candidate on board with former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Oh boy, the postmortem on this one is quite interesting. Elizabeth Warren last night, and I'm not a Warren supporter per se, but boy, she just killed it, man. She came in like the ultimate warrior and just body slammed and clotheslined and axe handled and top roped everybody in the room. Interestingly enough, the one person that she didn't seem to be able to land a decent punch on was Bernie Sanders. Just killed Bloomberg. I mean, absolutely decimated him. And of course, everybody on stage kind of had guns out for Bloomberg as well, just to get him the heck out of there. You know, I am trying to stay away from pushing my own preference in the primary race as I'm discussing this stuff. But at the same time, it really does bear repeating. I keep seeing this idea that Michael Bloomberg can't be worse than Donald Trump, and I am telling you, you're wrong. Michael Bloomberg very much can be worse than Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is a New York pseudo-billionaire who has a long history of problems with being an authoritarian prick that has big problems with women and big problems with minorities. He's also an incompetent boob. The man is a blithering idiot, and nearly nobody of any real intelligence is taking him seriously anymore. Now, if you take all of that and you put it in a package that's competent, which Michael Bloomberg is, then you may have a real problem on your hands. As things stand with Trump in office and who he is and what he is, the majority of people who are truly engaged can see right through him. I think a guy like Bloomberg has the intellect to really pull off some of the stuff that Trump has tried to do and hasn't really been able to get away with because of public backlash. Whereas Bloomberg, I think, can sell some of that stuff. So I'm sorry if you're a Bloomberg supporter, but no, sorry, just not buying that at all. That guy is dangerous, possibly more dangerous than Donald Trump. So let's go ahead and leave that aside for now. Warren just killed it. And again, she's not my number one candidate in the race. She's a distant second for me. You saw some of the reasons for that last night. Frankly, she does some very sort of pat standard political speech making tricks, right? Oh, I knew this one individual with this big backstory that's gonna make you well up with tears in your eyes and feel a lot of sympathy and a lot of empathy, so that you'll feel like we're on fighting for the same things. Those kinds of political sort of grandstanding. She tends to reach, in my opinion, too often for the, you know, for that sort of victim position. Oh, they're all being mean to me. Oh, they're beating me up, et cetera, et cetera. And I just don't care for it. Okay. With that said, she killed it last night. There's no question about that. And if Sanders wasn't in the race, I would probably, with some reluctance, but still probably would end up endorsing Warren. That said, Sanders is in the race, and Sanders is going to stay in the race. He did not have a lot of big, flashy moments last night, but he also didn't have to. Right now, he is the de facto front runner in the Democratic primary race, and he didn't have to have a lot of big headline moments last night. All he had to do was go up there and stay on message and continue to say the same things that he's been saying. And fortunately, if you're a Sanders supporter, that's what he does anyway. That's what he's been doing through his entire political career. Those of you who know me personally, or who have been a fan of you know, my page and my work for a long time, know that, you know, integrity is a very, very important thing to me. And in fact, that costs me a lot. That's one of the reasons why I don't have the big audiences that you see on some of these pages, where there's, you know, a half a million people or 8 million people like Occupy Democrats is throwing around it right now, because I'm not out here playing those games. I don't do the pandering shit. I'm not interested in telling you what you want to hear. I'm interested in telling you the truth. And that's never going to make me the number one most popular guy in the room. And also, that doesn't make Sanders the most popular guy in the room all the time. And that has been discussed by his opponents more than once. You know, it's been said more than one time that there's not a whole lot of people in the Senate that really like Bernie. And I can see why, because he's just not a bullshit artist. And when you live life like that, when you go through life like that, you know, playing that game and engaging at that level, and then somebody else comes along and succeeds without compromising their integrity, you look like a dick, even if you're the only one who sees it. And it's a really difficult thing, I think, for people to swallow. And frankly, you know, I have a lot of a lot of common ground in that with Sanders, right? There is no big machine here. There's no giant organization that's backing me or my show or my page or anything else. You are the giant organization, right? You folks who are reading this and listening to the podcast, visiting the page, all that stuff, you are the organization. I don't have a PAC. I don't have a nonprofit status. I am not an organization. I'm just me. And outside of my administrative role over at I Loved It, I've never really been able to hold on to that, because, quite frankly, just about every large group of ostensibly left-wing pages or liberal pages or whatever that I've ever tried to work with or worked with or had any kind of real contact with have turned out to be bullshit. There's always one or two or a small group of people at the top who are raking in cash for themselves and not really engaged in the process of fomenting ideological change or progress. This again is Sanders. So don't let me wander off. We're back on Bloomberg just died last night. Holy cow. I mean, Michael Bloomberg could not have lost that debate any more completely if he had just shot himself in the face right on stage. It's stunning to me that, you know, there were questions you could see coming for Bloomberg, right? The problems with the harassment complaints, the non-disclosure agreements, which is an interesting point that I'll get to in a minute. The stop and frisk stuff, he had to have known that he was going to get hit on that stuff, and he appeared to be completely unprepared to really address it. Even his defenses of his behavior when he attempted to defend him were very soft. They didn't ring true. They didn't strike me as being the input of somebody who was really trying, or really even somebody who had expected the questions to be asked. And that's kind of stunning to me. I actually gave credit to Bloomberg for being a little bit sharper knife than that. I've got a comment coming. Oh, hey, Chris, how are you? Let's see. Da-da-da-da. I don't know where my super chat function is. I've never seen that before. Okay, I don't want to get off on a big tangent about this, okay? But I love to wake up in the morning when Barack Obama was president. It used to be called I love to wake up in the morning when Barack Obama is president. I've actually been an admin there for, God, probably 7 or 8 years now, and I haven't been terribly active up until the last month or so. Each of the admins there, right? The page was founded by a guy named Dave Haberman, or Haberman. I honestly don't even know how it's pronounced. I've never heard it, but and he is kind of a hands-off administrator, right? He has this page. He's invited a few other people to come in and act as administrators on it over the years, and not all of us have the same perspective. Not all of us are even endorsing the same candidates or thinking of supporting the same candidates, right? We have one admin who seems to be pretty strongly for Elizabeth Warren. I myself, as should be fairly obvious at this point, am a very strong Sanders supporter. I think David is also very much a Sanders supporter. I don't want to speak for anybody else, but there's another fellow, Mike, who posts occasionally, Quiet Mike. He is also supporting Sanders, I believe, in the primary. And then we have two other admins that I can think of right off the top of my bat. And neither of them actually have posted much in a long time. I'm not even sure if they remember that they're administrators. So really, it's kind of the top two posters on that page right now are me and Chad. And Chad also runs The Good, the Chad, and the Ugly. He runs Flowers of New York. He's got several pages out there that he posts and cross-posts from. And he is definitely, you know, to my right. He supported Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. I did not. And so we have really worked in the context of that page to not step on each other's toes, to not try to push each other around or piss each other off or go into the argument. You know, there's 220,000 people who read that page or who have liked that page. And there's room enough for more than one opinion. It doesn't need to be an echo chamber. And so for that reason, you know, if you are on that page, you may see things that, you know, one moment, like I know Chad was really, really happy last night with Elizabeth Warren's performance and posted some things to that effect. And I tend to be posting more Bernie stuff, and Mike will come in and post some memes occasionally and does some work, but he's been fairly inactive as well over the last year or so. So to answer your question directly, Chris Haynes, who commented that she had left I Love It When They Became Anti-Progressive in 2016, I think that's a misconception, because there just is not a single voice or a single, you know, coordinated sort of purpose on that page. We all have our opinions and what we think and feel about things, and we try to give each other enough room to operate without trying to push one view or the other necessarily, as long as it's still all about, ultimately, it's about appealing to, you know, it's a fan page for Barack Obama, basically. And it built up and exploded in David's hands after he formed it. And now all of a sudden you've got this audience of, you know, 220,000 people, like I said. So that's a heck of an opportunity to get some education out there, to get some information out there, and to, you know, to be genuinely influential. And I think we've all tried to use that the best way that we as individual administrators think we can. And that's not always going to mean the same thing to me that it does to Chad, that it does to David, that it does to Mike. So I wouldn't characterize it as anti-progressive, nor would I characterize it necessarily as particularly progressive. It depends on who's posting. It depends on whose content it is and so forth. But that's, and that's, you know, David and I have had some conversations, and we've had, you know, conversations in the admin group and stuff like that. Dave was not real happy with a lot of the Hillary supporters in 16, and for good reasons, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's a lot of things that went on there, and I don't want to get off on that tangent, but there were definitely some things happening there that weren't real cool. I think he had some frustration with that, as did some other folks. So, but yeah, please, by all means, drop back by and take a look. I expect probably after this election, I think you're going to see that page start to fade out. Because at that point, now you're talking about, you know, it's been 4 years since Obama left office. And so I think just naturally, not that anybody's going to, you know, intentionally close it or anything like that. But I think that naturally you're going to see that audience sort of fade out. So. But back to the debates. There were three other people on stage, of course, Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden. Honestly, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that they weren't really impressed with Amy Klobuchar's performance. I thought it was the best she's done in a debate. I thought she was pretty on point. I thought that her criticisms, especially of Pete Buttigieg, were you know, very meritorious and very accurate, because he sounds like he's reading from a manual to me. It's a very sort of paint by numbers politics that I see coming from Pete. And he doesn't appeal to me. And the funny thing is, you know, I have a very diverse, you know, friend group, and a lot of my friends are LGBT. He's not real popular with most of them either. And you'd think that would be his natural audience. This one friend of mine posted a thing a few days ago about, something about, you know, waiting for 40 years to come out of the closet as a gay man. And now we have a gay man who's coming out of the closet as a Republican. Yeah, there's some stuff going on back channel as far as the name of the page and all that stuff. But like I said, probably the end of result is just going to be it'll slowly end up migrating to a new page. I would love to have a page called I Love It When I Wake Up in the Morning and Bernie Sanders is President. And on the DL, in fact, I do. It's just not launched yet because Bernie Sanders isn't president yet, and we don't want to look too presumptuous in that regard. So we're letting that bake for right now. And if and when the time comes that we actually do have a President Sanders, then we'll work on moving some of the audience over to that and using that as a platform as well. So, but yeah, nothing in the debate last night other than Warren's performance really stood out to me as being a great positive for anybody involved. I don't see that... anything happened last night that's going to cause a big shift in the race, with the exception of Bloomberg stepping all over his own dick. I think, not sure, and I'll tell you why in a minute, I think that probably was the end of Bloomberg's campaign. But the question also exists, and it's a valid one, right? Whether the punditocracy, which you could provisionally call me part of, I think it's a very valid question to ask whether we put too much weight on these debates and whether the average voter, the average Joe Jane citizen, is out there and really, really paying close attention to these debates, and how much they really care about it, as opposed to the people who are getting their information, you know, from memes and stuff like that, online. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, that's, again, you know, Chris Haynes, who's here commenting, if you watch the replay, you'll see her comments. You know, she's been around for a long time and she knows me, and I don't like playing that game, right? I'll put up a meme, I'll make a meme if I find one, but I don't think that should be a primary way to communicate. You know, politics and social issues are very complex and very difficult, and people spend their lives trying to understand these things in formal education and academic settings, and the idea that you can reduce any of it into just a hashtag or, you know, a series of bumper stickers is kind of obnoxious to me. I find myself, you know, Elizabeth Warren today, actually, changed her position about taking money from super PACs. Now, if I were one of the typical pundits, of course, I would jump all over that. And, oh, she's a hypocrite. Oh, blah, 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 blah. She flip-flopped. And I'm not going to do that. And one of the reasons I'm not going to do that is because I completely understand it, right? And I've made this analogy before. It's the resume cheating problem, right? If 80% of the resumes out there people lie on and you don't, you're at a disadvantage right out of the block. And you can make the choice, right? You and I make the choice every day to go ahead and stick with my guns and stay, you know, stay true to what I believe in. So I don't cheat on my resume, and the same way I don't do the clickbaiting stuff. I don't roll up, and I've seen people do this, boy. Just about every big page on Facebook does this shit. They'll roll up 50 or 60 different accounts and start, you know, sharing their own links under these other accounts and pretending like they have all this massive public support when really it's just one or two people that are doing and making all the noise. But they know how to make themselves look like a crowd. That's not a game I will ever play. I absolutely refuse to do it. And again, I pay a price for that, right? This is why I have such trouble growing an audience, because that kind of thing appeals to people. Part of my whole mission in doing this stuff is to defuse and neutralize that kind of stuff, and to get people to think more critically about the media that they're consuming and who benefits from it and who is in control of it and what are they really trying to get across. And so as a result of that, my audience is always going to be limited to a fairly narrow band of people who are critical thinkers and people who are fairly intellectual or academic in the way they approach things, rather than that populist sloganeering, hashtagging, hand-waving, jump on every bandwagon bullshit that people do to build their pages. And so when Elizabeth Warren comes out and says, well, I know that I said, and the news story I read about it even noted that her website still says that she doesn't take super PAC money. And she comes out today and says, well, you know what, I'm going to have to, because everybody else is. And when you've only got one or two people in the race who are refusing to do that, that just puts them at a disadvantage. Now, I agree with her reasoning. I don't agree with her decision to concede to that. I think the only way you beat that is to stick to your guns and eventually make other people come around to doing things your way. And if they can't compete, too bad. Right? If you can't make it on your merits, then you don't deserve to be in the pool. And that is what I'm seeing with Bloomberg. That's very much what I'm seeing, frankly, with Pete Buttigieg. His record is not good, period. In no way does he have a record that should appeal to anybody who is, you know, genuinely committed to progressive ideals and to genuine social and political progress, right? I feel, and I'm trying to be careful how I choose my words here, because I don't want to just, you know, flat out call the guy a token, but I really do feel like a lot of his base are people who really just want to loudly proclaim how much of an ally they are to the LGBTQ community. And I don't have a lot of room for that in my life. And let me be clear, I have plenty of room for allies. I don't have a lot of room for people who make a bunch of noise about being allies. You know, it's a little bit ironic. I was raised in a pretty devoutly religious culture, right? My dad's people were Dutch Reformed. My mom's people were fundamentalists and Pentecostals. And so I'm an atheist. And still, in spite of that, my favorite Bible verse is still Matthew 6, verse 5, right? When you pray, don't be like the hypocrites standing on the street corners and making a bunch of noise. They've got their reward, right? That's just an attitude that I firmly believe in. And I'm really kind of hating this because I'm wandering and it's turning into an advertisement for John Henry, which is not what I want to do with this show. So back to the debates. Definitely Bloomberg was the big loser last night. There's no question about that. I think Klobuchar may have made some advances. Obviously, Warren killed it. I think Sanders held his ground. I think Mayor Pete probably lost. And then we get to Joe Biden, who, you know, I was watching Anna Kasparian over at the Young Turks earlier today, and she made the observation, you almost kind of feel sorry for Joe. And I see where she's coming from. It's a little bit tough to watch him up there. And you can tell he's earnest. You know, he really does believe in the things that he's saying. And yet, he's just got that kind of cultural out-of-touchness and a little bit confused about things like the Me Too movement and so on and so forth that he's just not reaching. He's not reaching the young people. He's not reaching the minority communities the way that he needs to. And it's a little bit sad, though, to watch him on stage and realize that you are looking at a man who is coming to grips in real time with the reality that his career has passed him by. That said, I don't dislike Joe, in terms of personality, I think he's a reasonably decent and affable guy. I think that a lot of the positions that he has held, I disagree with them. I also understand the background of them and where he comes from. And so I get it, but I'm not going to vote for him because I think that he's wrong on a lot of these things. So Biden... last night's debate didn't do him any favors, didn't do Pete any favors. Definitely is going to be a boost for Warren. I expect to see her take at least a 7-point jump in the polls that come out over the next week or so, and maybe more than that. I don't think she'll overtake Sanders, but I think she may even be able to make it competitive yet. Obviously, as a Sanders supporter, I hope she doesn't, but I think the possibility is still there. So I think Amy Klobuchar, I would really like to see her in the next administration someplace. Again, she strikes me as somebody who definitely, as she hit on repeatedly, you know, she has the heart for the people. I think she really does have the best interests of the people and the country at heart. I think she genuinely cares about the citizens of this country. Which is something that I don't get from Mayor Pete, certainly not from Michael Bloomberg. And this is, again, this is Joe's thing, Joe Biden's thing, you know, and, you know, yeah, he lies a lot. So does Bloomberg, and most of them do. But it's awfully hard to fake sincerity, you know. You can go out there and turn on the waterworks and do all the crying and everything else, and those of us of a certain age may remember, you know, the televangelist scandals of the late 80s where you have, you know, Jimmy Swagger getting caught in a hotel room with his secretary and going on TV and crying and, oh, I have sinned against you, everybody who wasn't going to be married to him for the rest of their lives anyway saw through that crap. And I don't get that vibe from Biden. I don't get that vibe from Klobuchar. I think they're both sincere, whether I agree with them all the time or not. And even if I think they're being dishonest, particularly with Biden, even if he's being dishonest about some things, I still think he has a genuine internal kind of commitment to his principles. That said, he's not going to win the race, and I think, frankly, it's probably time for him to go ahead and call it a day. I think he would be a good advisor. I don't think that he would be a good president, and I don't necessarily see where he would have great functionality in an active cabinet position. So, Swigert was with the sex worker, and God, who was it that got caught with Jessica Hahn? Was that Jim Baker that got caught with her? I remember Sam Kinison going nuts over that back in the day. But anyway, don't let me get distracted because I'm bad for that. So, other than, I think you're going to see Bloomberg fall off the map. I think you're going to see Warren get a little boost, or possibly a moderate-sized boost out of last night's debate. But fundamentally, I don't think the map has changed. Nate Silver has Bernie coming into Super Tuesday, or coming out of Super Tuesday, with like 400 delegates and basically dominating the field at that point. And right now, that still feels like the direction that things are headed. That said, it's still early. A lot of things can happen, and we'll see how it goes. I will say this, and I've said it before, and again, it's still early in the process. It's too early yet to say, this is happening, or this is how it's going to happen. We don't know yet, but if, as we go through this process, we come in to the Democratic convention, and Sanders has a commanding lead of delegates, and then all of a sudden it turns into this super delegate crap again, two things are going to happen. And mark my words, okay? I've made predictions in the past, and I've been right on an awful lot of them, and I'm making one now. If we follow the same pattern in 2020, if the DNC follows the same pattern in 2020 that they did in 2016, two things are going to happen. Number one, the Democratic Party is done. Period. They're over with. They will lose their base, and nobody will trust them again. They will become Republican light and fade into obscurity. Number two, Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States if they play that game again. And I said this in 2016 before Hillary Clinton even got the nomination. I said, you know what? If the Democratic Party ignores all these people that are on fire for Sanders right now, they're going to completely stuff this up and lose the election. And people went, no, you just hate women. And no, you don't know what you're talking about. Nah, 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 nah. And then I said it again when she got the nomination. That's it. Trump is going to win this. And everybody went, no, you're just saying that because you hate women and you hate this and blah, 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 and blah, blah, and this and that. And at the end of the day, yeah, she got 3 million more votes, but she still lost the election, and she lost the election to her own ego. She lost because of hubris, period. And it's time for us to eat that and face it. Because if we let it happen again, folks, we're not only going to get Trump for another 4 years, we may lose the whole country. Okay? And that's not hyperbole. That's not a metaphor. And that's not just me trying to be shocking and dramatic. Okay? I genuinely believe that if Donald Trump is elected to the presidency of the United States again, the United States as we have known it is done. Period. This is very, very important election. The most important election of my lifetime, and I hope it we never see another election that is this important, because this is way too much stress and way too much energy spent worrying about this stuff. We need to make some very fundamental decisions in this country. And the number one decision we need to make is, do you want to live in a nation of sick idiots or do you not? Okay, because if you don't, then we need to be working on universal health care. We need to be working on universal higher education. We need to be working on robust social welfare programs that empower each and every single American to become the best they can be at whatever they do. Okay, we need critical thinkers. And this is, I've hit on this a million times and I'll keep hitting on it. No, it is not in the interests of the ownership class of this country, the people who own everything, the top 300 to 1,000 people who control most of the money and most of the commerce and most of the material wealth in this country. It is absolutely against their interests to have an educated, engaged, informed, and active voting population. And that is exactly why that's what we need. As long as we continue to sit back and allow these decisions to be made for us the way that many of us did in 2016, we're going to continue to eat it until it's too late and we can't bring it back anymore. And again, it's early in the process. We will see what happens. We'll see how it goes. But right now, my endorsement is still for Bernie Sanders. And I still believe that he is far and away the best candidate in the race. Certainly, he is the only candidate in my lifetime who has adhered or appealed this closely to my own beliefs. And some of this stuff, again, I've been saying since I was in high school. Right? I lived through the 80s. I was in high school when the Reagan administration decided to declare ketchup a vegetable so that they could slice the cost of the school lunch program and those kinds of maneuvers. I went through the welfare queen demonization of black women. I went through all of that. And I told people then it's ugly. And it's going to get uglier. And eventually you're going to get to the point where there's a whole lot more people like me who are on the outside, who are disenfranchised, who are left behind by the process. And when that group of people gets big enough, all hell's going to break loose. There's two ways that all hell can break loose on that point. The first way, of course, is that we just explode into mass civil unrest and conflict, and we basically end up going through another civil war. The other way is through a political revolution, and that's one of the reasons, again, why I'm so hot on Sanders, because I really think he's the best chance we've got effectively push back against the encroaching oligarchy and plutocracy that is taking over our government right now and has been for many years without having to fall into a situation of internal armed conflict. I don't think any of us wants to see that happen. I certainly don't. I think there's some people out there who think they want to see that happen. These folks that are out there waving their guns around, like this idiot girl that works for InfoWars that goes out and provokes a bunch of people and says a bunch of nasty stuff and then turns the cameras on and pretends like they're just there hating on her because she likes Donald Trump. That was a whole big work. It was all bullshit. She framed that. She staged it. And that's how that side of the spectrum has always worked. So we know that, and my job is to give you the tools to fight back against that stuff, right? Here's the problem is you get the bad actors. You get the folks who are just in it with the pretense, and then they really just want to promote themselves. And that's really where I think you see the Michael Bloombergs being very dangerous. I feel like Pete Buttigieg fits into that sort of description, right? I think that his personal ambition drives him much more than any sort of ideological goal or reasoning. And that does not appeal to me. It not only doesn't appeal to me, I think it's dangerous, because these folks go out and they gain popular support. And I started talking about this last night and I kind of got off, but when Barack Obama was running, My dad and I had a conversation. My dad was pretty conservative, and also pretty libertarian, right? And he made the observation, and it was very valid, that Barack Obama could win and be popular and get away with doing a lot of the same stuff that the liberal part of the country was excoriating George Bush for. And you saw some of that happen. And I think that that is very much one of the big dangers of these candidates like Buttigieg, like Hillary Clinton, frankly. I think she very much fell into that category, like Bloomberg. People who come in and they put on the labels, oh, I'm a Democrat. They put on the labels, oh, I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. Look at how progressive I am. I have black friends and I'm gay or whatever, right? They put that uniform on, but they're still the same plutocrats, right? I've talked before, and in fact, I even put up a definition page for it on my website. Orwell's boot. Orwell's boot is a really important concept in my philosophy, right? And of course, Orwell's boot references a passage in 1984 in which O'Brien, the antagonist, is talking to Winston Smith, the protagonist, and says, if you want a picture of the future of the human race, if you want a picture of the future of humanity, imagine a boot stomping on a human face forever. To me, the number one separation between genuine progressives and those who make a pretense to progressivism to advance their own personal interests is genuine progressives want to eliminate Orwell's boot. The pretenders want to wear it. It's my turn, right? Anytime somebody says it's our turn, that's a big red flag for me, because that's telling me, don't think about the issues. Don't think about my personal merits. I want you to think about me as an identity. I want you to think about me not as John Henry. I want you to think about me as long hair or Gen X or whatever, Native American or part black, whatever you want, box that you want to put me in that would be politically advantageous as an ad pitch, right? When you start saying, oh, it's time we had a woman, it's time we had a Jewish president, it's time we had a gay president, it's their turn, it's your turn, it's our turn, that's always, 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 always bad thinking, bad critical thinking. It's bad logic, okay? We're looking for shortcuts. We're looking for a quick and easy way to define what we want, and anybody who slaps the label on, we go, oh, yeah, them, right? I talked about this last night, the vote blue no matter who thing, right? Vote blue no matter who. Well, folks, David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, ran for Congress as a Democrat. Okay? Are you sure vote blue no matter who is the way you want to go? When David Duke shows up running for president on the Democratic ticket, are you going to vote for him just because he's a Democrat? Because if you are, you're probably not my core audience. Okay, straight up, you are probably not the people that I am trying to reach, because the people I'm trying to reach are thinking more carefully than that, and I believe that those are the genuine leaders in the world, and eventually everybody else kind of comes behind, and the folks who were, it's about time, they get on board when they realize that this is the direction the train's going, and they can either ride or get left behind. So my group, whether I always agree with them or not, and Chris and I have had some pretty sharp disagreements over the years, as friends. I don't expect everybody to agree with me all the time, but I definitely want people to think. I want people to put their minds to it. I want people to be able to separate their biases from the facts, right? You know, there are things that I would like to see in the world that I accept I can't because it would radically violate core principles in order to see those things. For instance, I'd love to see Fox News completely shut down. I'd love to see Fox News off the air and never allowed to broadcast again. I think they're an absolute poison on this country. The problem is, your only other option is state censorship, and that's too much power for a government to have, right? That's me being lazy. That's me saying, you know what, I don't want to have to go through the trouble of thinking about this and deciding for myself whether or not this is a valid information source. I want to just hand it over to somebody else to make that decision for me, and that is the most dangerous thing to a democracy that I can imagine, right? That is literally giving up your liberty and handing the keys over to somebody else and letting them drive the car. That's not how we're going to get where we want to go. I've done a lot of... I've done several articles in the past about anarchy and why it's just not a thing. And, of course, I get a lot of arguments from anarchists because they tend to, again, attach to the label like the majority of people do. They attach to the label and they see you criticizing the label and they want to push back against that. But those people, right, who want to just be left alone and do as they will so long as they're not hurting anybody else, they don't realize that the only way for that to happen is for us to exist within a cooperative system with equality for everybody, equality in the eyes of the law, equality under equality of the opportunity, equality under the law, equal access to resources and to chances to develop themselves personally. Right? And I've said it before, I don't care if, you know, you want to braid underarm here for a living. If that's what you want to do, if that is your passion, then as a society, I think it's in our best interest to help you do that to the absolute best of your ability. That, to me, is the end goal of most of these people who call themselves anarchists, right? So, and I think democratic socialism is a way to get there. So, and as usual, I have wandered far afield. The topic today was the postmortem of the democratic debate, and we're winding up here towards the top of the hour. We're 45 minutes into the show right now. I've got 46, and so let's go ahead and again revisit sort of the core concepts for today. Again, number one, I think Elizabeth Warren killed it last night. I think she did a great job. I did see, some of those flashes of the things about her that I don't particularly care for. The that sort of trite and contrived, well, I know a man, I met a man on the campaign trail, and he was 103 years old, and or whatever, you know, I can't remember the story she told. I think Amy Klobuchar pulled one of those out last night, and Joe Biden is good for those kinds of stories as well, and almost every politician does it at some time, right? Elizabeth Warren goes to that well too often for me, and it feels insincere, it feels saccharine, and consequently, she doesn't resonate with me as much as Sanders does, but last night she killed it. There's just no getting around that. She came in, like I said, she came in like the ultimate warrior, just doing that run in and high speed and clotheslining everybody in the room and you know, shaking the ring ropes and spitting in the air and rah, you know, she did a hell of a job last night. So and good for her. You know, that's she's trying to win a race and I think she definitely helped her cause with her performance last night. I think that Sanders held his position, and I think that's all he had to do. And I think, you know, probably Sanders was the biggest beneficiary of Bloomberg being there, because Bloomberg gave everybody someone to gang up on other than Bernie Sanders, right? And even, like, if you watch some of the camera angles and stuff like that last night, they were still trying to, you know, just sort of discount Sanders and keep focus on other people and so on and so forth. But really, last night was about massacring Michael Bloomberg, and they did. Every single person on that stage took a bite out of him. Now, the one thing I will say is that watching Sanders directly address Bloomberg as a billionaire, as an oligarch, as part of the 1%, the so-called 1%, I think that does have some value to Sanders that perhaps we hadn't seen before, in that now we have Bernie Sanders in a direct confrontation. So now he's not just making these demagogic speeches of down with the billionaires and down with the 1%. Now here's a human being standing in front of him who he can look in the eye and say, you know what, the things you do, I don't like. And I think that will help him. Certainly, if anybody had any question about his ability to hold his own on a debate stage with Donald Trump, last night should have put an end to those worries. And like I said, Warren did a great job. I think Amy Klobuchar is doing a great job of establishing herself as somebody that we want in the next presidential administration somewhere. I'm not sure that she would rise to being a good running mate for Sanders, but I think that she would fit well in the cabinet. I think Buttigieg could fit somewhere in there. If you're careful, I think if we want to have a pro-business, pro-status quo, pro-middle-of-the-road presence in a Sanders administration, Pete Buttigieg might be a good guy for that. And certainly Sanders is smart enough to hire people that don't always agree with him. So we probably haven't seen the last of Mayor Pete, but I certainly don't think that he's going to win any, I don't think he's going to win the presidential nomination by any stretch of the imagination. And that's not because he's gay, that's not because of anything except that his record sucks. He's got a really troublesome record, especially with race relations in South Bend. He's got a very sort of distasteful approach towards solving issues of poverty and towards understanding the real problems of real people, which is kind of ironic because he puts himself over. He had the line last night, I've got my one house. That's very cute. Okay, but guess what? Being broke doesn't make you a messiah any more than being rich does. Okay? Whether you're rich or poor isn't the point. The question is, what are the policies you support, and do they support the sustainability of a path to peace, progress, and prosperity for the greatest possible number of people in this country? And again, that is the Sanders thing. Now, there's one other note that I wanted to make before I get out of here and do my end cap and shut the show down for the night. The last question of the night. And I called this the minute it came out, they asked it and it was answered. I said, there you go, right there. Right. So the last question of the night was, should the person who comes into the convention with the most delegates have the nomination? Right. That translates into, should democracy, should the will of the people be paramount, or should there be a second layer of decision? Should there be a check and balance against the will of the people, as exemplified in the Democratic Party by the superdelegate process, where they can come in and say, well, we know you've got this, 1,450 delegates, but that doesn't quite meet the threshold, and these other 500 superdelegates. Every single person on that stage, except for Bernie Sanders, said, I think we should let the party process handle it. Sanders says, no, I want the people's voice to be heard. Now, I talked about this last night. I'll mention it again sometime. I am not always a pure Democrat. Certainly, the wave of constitutional amendments at the state level in the last decade that tried to ban gay marriage are an absolutely crystal example of why one cannot always assume that a million people are more honorable or intelligent than one person. Okay, so I think there is a place for small R Republicanism in in a free society and in a democratic process. However, I do not think that that place is in the selection of a candidate. Okay? When you've got somebody who has this overwhelming majority of popular support, somebody who can energize the down ticket, as they say, right? The punditocracy loves to talk about the down ticket, which is, of course, the state level and local level and congressional candidates that are running for the party. If you want to see somebody who's going to energize a Democratic Party, that's going to be Bernie Sanders. If you want to see somebody whose followers and whose supporters are going to go out and put more people into office because they support Sanders, that's your guy, okay? If the Democratic Party really wants to maintain itself as an entity and lead into the next generation and bring young people into the process and bring more working people and more minorities of color and women and so forth into the process and make them feel like they have a place at the table, Sanders is the guy. There's no question about that in my mind whatsoever. So I said last night, right, and I pointed this out, speaking from a political science perspective, right, small d democracy is one person, one vote, the will of the people. Small r Republican is you have a selected elite group who makes the decisions for the people. And what you saw on that debate stage, and it's so tremendously ironic, six candidates running for the Democratic Party, one of them is constantly battered with this criticism that he's not a real Democrat because Bernie Sanders has always run as an independent. And yet Bernie Sanders was the only candidate on that stage who gave a small d Democratic answer. The other five responses were textbook small r Republicanism. And so that struck me as being very, very deeply ironic and a little bit funny. And also, by the way, you're going to see this sort of dichotomy, right, where in 2016, in the general election, you had Hillary Clinton, who had a higher number of votes but lost the electoral college, right? And of course, her supporters and most of the left is like, oh, that's terrible. We've got to kill the Electoral College. She got more votes. She got more votes. It's going to be really interesting to see how those voices respond if we come into the convention and Sanders has a commanding lead of the delegate count and has, retains his commanding lead of the crowd. And yet that same group of people is now going to say, oh, we need to have a brokered convention. Oh, we need to have the super delegates decide. I'm wondering if the cognitive dissonance necessary to hold those two thoughts in your head is going to play out, or how it's going to play out here as the electoral process continues to go forward. But so that's the evening's show. I've got 8:57 here, so it's time for the end cap. Just want to remind you, I am John Henry. You can find me on the interwebs at johnhenry.us. I am, of course, on Facebook, Facebook/JohnHenryUS. Also, I am an administrator, one of many, over at the page called I Loved to Wake Up in the Morning when Barack Obama was president, and you can enjoy it over there. I am on Twitter at JohnHenry_US. I'm on YouTube right here if you're watching it, but if you're listening to the podcast, it's /JohnHenryUS, just like everything else. And I am on a podcast. I am on Apple Podcasts. I'm on Spotify. I'm on TuneIn. I'm on Stitcher. I'm on, if you have an Android phone, there's a button on my website you can punch in and do the one-click add to whatever your podcasting software is directly from my site, if you would like. And I've got some other things coming out too as well. And I did want to add also that this, I archive all of these shows on YouTube. And so you can see those there as well. if podcasting isn't your thing. So, Chris Haynes, thank you very much. You were the big communicator tonight on the chat room, and it was very good to see you again as well. Certainly I have enjoyed the intellectual challenges that you have presented to me over the years. Again, whether we always agree or not isn't the point. You definitely always make me think. And I appreciate that. I don't even know what a super chat is, Chris. I assume that's probably a tool that I don't have access to yet. When my subscriber count dropped below 1,000, my channel was demonetized and I lost access to a bunch of tools. And in fact, I don't think I'm supposed to be able to live stream right now, because my viewer count is below 1,000. But, I'm certainly looking into that. I'm doing everything I can, albeit somewhat reluctantly, to get engaged in this marketing and promotions kind of crap and, doing more of the, you know, like, share, and subscribe routine and stuff. I really, really hate doing that. And the unfortunate reality is if I don't do it, people don't. And I need eyes and ears on what I am saying, or I'm just screaming at the wall for no purpose. So, but in the meantime, it is 8:59 and some odd seconds, which means I am just about done. Oh, well, yeah, that's probably why I don't have access to that thing. So Chris is telling me that the super chat thing actually generates some cash when people chat. And that's probably why I don't have one, because my channel's not monetized right now. If you see ads on any video on my channel right now, somebody else is making the money. That does not come to me. As far as supporting me goes, you know, the PayPal thing, paypal.me/JohnHenryUS and patreon.com/JohnHenry. The Patreon campaign is not open yet, but I keep mentioning the URL, so when it is, you'll know what it is and all that other good stuff. So, and that's it for me. I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you to Chris for your participation tonight and your chatting in. And it's certainly good to see you. And hopefully, as time goes by, we will build this up and have more people. But in the meantime, I am John Henry from JohnHenry.us. Thank you for listening. I will be back tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And until then, have a great, great day.